Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
The largest part of an organization's value is often linked to intangible assets. Yet in the eyes of many, value remains tied to stock price or cash on hand. Martin Thomas aims to get people to rethink that view. He explains more in this episode of the FM Magazine podcast. I'm Senior Editor Neil Amato. In this episode, I speak with Martin Thomas. Martin is a former executive with Unilever and holds the CGMA designation. Martin is co-author of the 2016 book, The Multi-Capital Scorecard, Rethinking Organizational Performance. Here's the conversation with Martin. Martin, thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
First, tell us a bit about your background.
Well, I'm English. I worked for Unilever for many years, a multinational, living and working. I'm a management accountant, fellow of the Governance Institute and of CGMA. And I have master's degrees in both financial control and in change management.
Since leaving paid employment, you've stayed busy, including writing a book called The Multi-Capital Scorecard with your co-author, Mark McElroy. What is the book about?
The book offers principles and a methodology for informing businesses and other organizations about their individual journeys towards becoming less unsustainable. Many firms know that they are not operating in ways that they consider to be sustainable, but very few of them know what to do to change, and we hope that this book helps them.
So you touched on it a little bit, but why did you write the book?
We were both working towards measuring sustainable performance, and from my personal point of view, none of the boards on which I'd ever served had any meaningful way of measuring sustainability performance. Academia had no answers, neither did the accounting profession. Mark had already published the non-financial process that he called context-based sustainability, but together we knew that it would only be complete when we added the economic impacts and made it a measurement. That's what we did. We made it a measurement of progression rather than a binary categorization of whether performance was sustainable or unsustainable.
So let's go back. Your co-author, Mark, how did you meet him?
Well, we were both speaking at a conference of a research group called CSER, the Center for Social and Environmental Accounting Research, which has for many years been based in St. Andrews University in Scotland. And we were both presenting different aspects of performance measurement and stakeholder engagement. And as soon as I heard Mark's thesis, which was the thesis of his PhD submission, I knew that it was the basis for doing something seriously well. So that's how we got together and we started thinking about it then. That was 2011. I'd already been working on such things since 2007, 2008. And by the time we got to 2012 and his book had been published, we were both working towards documenting a complete methodology as well as identifying the basic underlying principles, and that's what we did. Well, the scorecard as such is simply the emblem. It's the output. It's the outward and visible sign of what's gone on inside the organization. We based it on our learning and our understanding of the real world and our experience of what organizations need in order to set some standards and answer some demanding questions.
So why is this line of thinking in your mind, why is this necessary today?
Well, I think it's necessary to all of us. Mankind is consuming more resources than Mother Earth can provide. Financial accounting ignores most externalities, that is to say the costs, the general costs that fall outside of the accounts of the organization. For example, there's no charge made for fresh air in anyone's financial accounts. But we collectively are damaging the atmosphere and avoiding the cost of cleaning it up. We need to understand the world's natural limits and organize ourselves to meet them. Businesses and other organizations also need to understand the intangible assets, such as brands, innovative capacity, and reputation, on which their futures depend.
So a lot of people throw around the word sustainability. It probably means different things to different people. But what does sustainability mean to you?
In a nutshell, it means meeting our own needs without jeopardizing the ability of future generations to meet theirs.
Sir Ian Cheshire, a previous advisory board chairman of the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership, has said, quote, "We need to transform the way our economy works so that we can understand how our businesses use all forms of capital in productive and sustainable ways." First, what are all forms of capital?
Well, the three broad groups are economic capital, environmental capital, and social capital. Our financial accounts take account of financial invested capital and manufactured capital, such as buildings and equipment. But much intellectual capital is ignored, despite being the underpinning of brands, of information systems, and reputations. The value of our human capital, individual skills and competencies, don't figure in our balance sheets, despite all being the drivers of future profitable growth. Social capitals include all that we do collectively. For example, corporate governance, innovative capacity, and social adaptability are all intangible assets that today are the drivers of future success. These are all internal social capitals, but there are also external societal capitals on which we all draw. Think about transport infrastructures, communications, and education. So all of those we group into the social bottom line. Then there's the natural capital, which includes the Earth's crust and the biosphere on which we all depend, but which we are collectively destroying. So that's the third, that's the environmental capital, the third bottom line. And I think Sir Ian, in his statement, is simply recognizing that we need to take all of these capitals and our impacts upon them into account.
So speaking again of that guidance about transforming kind of the way we do a lot of things, why is that guidance important to you?
It's clear to all astute users of accounting information that the short-term focus on financial performance alone ignores many long-term factors. In particular, those firms that manage their non-financial performance in dealing with all other impacts can be expected to succeed for longer than those who do not do so. In the long run, the substance of the management's commitment to operating cleanly and sustainably reflects in the value of the business.
You said one of your aims is to point out the, quote, myopic inadequacy of monocapitalism. First, define what you mean by monocapitalism.
Well, monocapitalism focuses exclusively on economic performance. This has been the norm of capitalism. It ignores costs and other impacts that do not hit the income statement, and the materiality of everything else is measured in economic or financial terms. That's monocapitalism.
And then take me through why that view is myopic in your mind.
Well, let's say the Greek mythological creature with one big eye was called Cyclops. One eye gives no perspective. Seeing performance in terms of only financial impacts indicates short-term performance, but ignores long-term consequences. Ignoring externalized costs, social impacts, and intangible assets is a symptom of collective short-sightedness or myopia.
You've said, and others have said as well, that the value of companies is now mostly intangible assets. I'm not sure that people realize maybe how great that percentage is. Tell me some about that, and tell me the significance of that high percentage of intangible asset worth.
When I took my first accounting qualifications, the accounting records of broadly tangible assets represented something above 80% of the value that the stock market put upon those companies. In 2015, that has completely reversed. 87% of the valuation given by the S&P investors to quoted companies is now represented by intangible assets such as brands, innovative capacity, governance capabilities, and reputations. Current reporting systems focus almost all their energy and auditing resource on the remaining 13% of value captured by tangible assets in financial accounts. This, in my opinion, should shake the accounting profession to its roots. The fact that 87% of corporate economic value, forget about environmental and social, 87% of what is recognized by the stock exchange investors as economic capital escapes current performance measurement principles and processes.
When you hear the term corporate social responsibility, what comes to mind?
Corporate social responsibility is, in my opinion, an early stage of organizations recognizing that financials alone don't tell a full story. But the corporate social responsibility reports that I've seen tend to show simply incremental change on previous years. They fail to answer the vital question of how much is needed to be sustainable. And paradoxically, in my opinion, this gives sustainability accounting a bad reputation, because a lot of CSR reporting actually doesn't answer any question about how sustainable the performance has been in any period, or whether it's sustainable at all.
In your book, you mentioned something called, quote, the sustainability norm. What is that term's significance in the multi-capital scorecard?
The sustainability norm lies at the heart of the multi-capital scorecard, as it does lie at the heart of what Mark called context-based sustainability accounting. It represents a level of performance in respect of each impact on vital capitals that specifies, quote, how much is enough, unquote, to be sustainable in that specific context. stakeholders' expectations feed in to form these norms, and progression towards meeting them is critically meaningful. So the sustainability norm is a phenomenon that most organizations at the moment ignore completely, and we believe it's essential in order to be measuring their progression towards becoming sustainable.
You've said that the multi-capital scorecard rejects maximization as a philosophy. Explain a little more what that means.
The economic impacts on investors' capital, profit maximization, is a simplistic but obvious goal. However, it can only be valid if all costs are fully taken into account and if we all act, if organizations act within their fair shares of the boundaries of our natural capital. And once we start thinking about limits of natural resources and our need to reinvest in our collective capacities to innovate, govern, etc., we need a philosophy of sufficiency rather than one of maximization. This is not new in economic terms even. In financial terms, the net present value concept that we adopt in capital investment appraisal asks, how much is enough to cover the cost of capital? It's a threshold. It's not a ceiling. It doesn't say you mustn't do more than cover the cost of capital, but you must at least cover that cost. So that's a sufficiency concept rather than a maximization concept. And applying that to all areas of impact allows us to see whether organizations are meeting all their sustainability norms. The collective performance cannot be said to be sustainable until all areas of impact are meeting their sustainability norms. Sufficiency across the board, therefore, replaces maximization of any one impact at the cost of others. And that's why we say we reject maximization as an underlying philosophy.
So the book has been out about 20 months. Have you had any reaction to it from the business world?
Several companies that were already committed to context-based sustainability management have warmed to the prospect of extending it to include economic performance. Subsidiaries of Unilever and Procter & Gamble, as well as others, have embraced the inclusion of economic performance. To be frank, it requires a new mindset for most to genuinely integrate economic into social and environmental performance measurements. But it seems to me pretty obvious that there are trade-offs to be made between them all, so it makes a lot of sense. No organization can be sustainable if it's not economically sustainable without integrating all three prongs of the triple bottom line, social, environmental, and economic performance. We will continue to subordinate all other impacts to financial performance. In some contexts, this may be right, but in many others, it may be quite wrong.
It does, it does. So I wanted to ask, just aside from thinking about it in business terms, was there a time in your life maybe that you said sustainability matters? Was there a moment that maybe you realized something about how we kind of live our lives, or you live your life, that you said sustainability matters to me?
To be honest, it's been at the back of my mind since the early 1970s. I recall advocating the inclusion of human capital and social capitals on balance sheets when I wrote essays for my master's in financial control in the early 1970s. I also recall trying to deal with anomalies in accounting for brands, that's to say, the difference between homegrown and purchased brands, while working for Unilever. It was not labeled sustainability, but it was there. And within Unilever, social and environmental responsibility were part of the DNA of the organizations since their inception. I recall working in Colombia where a new plantation needed to be manned, and the organization built new houses for the people that were to work there. They built schools, hospitals, churches, and social centers so that the people that were working on that plantation had a complete lifestyle that was not just about work. And it seemed to me completely obvious that that would be the right thing to do. And the partners agreed. And that's the way it was. But it's been part of the way Unilever thinks since Lord Leverhulme built, since before Lord Leverhulme built the village at Port Sunlight with housing for his people that were working in his soap factory there. And that was in the century before last.
And I've heard that name, but I'd like for you, if you could, explain a little more about him and his role with the company.
Well, Unilever was a combination of Lever Brothers of the UK and Margarine Unie of the Netherlands. And these were all family businesses that came together to strengthen their supply of raw materials and one thing and the other. And Lord Leverhulme was the founding father of the UK part of that. And Port Sunlight, just outside Liverpool, was the name of the factory that he built to process the oils that were brought in from abroad to make soap. And the Margarine Unie was doing similar work in the Netherlands. And Lord Leverhulme had very deep social conscience. You may say it was enlightened self-interest. But he did go to extraordinary lengths to create some social capitals. And Port Sunlight was just one of them.
That's an excellent example. It's a great example. In closing for this podcast episode, is there anything you'd like to finish on? Anything I didn't ask you about that you'd like to discuss?
I think that I'd like to just emphasize that stakeholder engagement permeates the whole process in the multi-capital scorecard. It provides the link to the outside world that feeds the adaptive capacity of the firm. In turbulent times, we all need to adapt more than ever before. And the multi-capital scorecard enables forward-thinking firms to take the lead. It was Professor Ian Thompson at Birmingham University in the UK that said, I've been asking myself if there's a better way of doing this, but I don't believe there is. And to me, that seemed a great endorsement.
Again, that was Martin Thomas, an author of The Multicapital Scorecard, Rethinking Organizational Performance. You're listening to the FM Magazine podcast. Find future episodes and other management accounting content at fm-magazine.com.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.